Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
The Athletic.
Let's talk about six, baby. Let's talk about you and me. Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things that may be. Let's talk about six.
It's Marcella. Still going. Why? No, it's gone in. It's took a deflection that Liverpool lead. Trent Alexander-Arnold. For me, they were made the run. It almost worked its way through. There's the shot. Oh, what about that? What a hit. Naby Keita. Match day three in the Champions League in Madrid. Salah against Oblak. Salah scores. Coolest man in the place.
Right, so next up, Manchester United at Old Trafford. This is the Red Agenda, and it's turning out to be a captivating week in Liverpool's season. Crazy, mad events of the Wanda Metropolitano, still very much fresh in our minds as the Reds head into one of the biggest games in world football. It's the Red Agenda. I'm Steve Hothersall, James Pearce alongside me, and let's kick it off with Madrid. James, you were out there. What a venue. That stadium is absolutely magical.
Yeah, one of the greatest stadiums I think I've ever had the pleasure of visiting. Obviously, happy memories from that Champions League final back in 2019, and and it was just an amazing contest, wasn't it? And I think probably Liverpool's biggest kind of away win, you'd say, as opposed to kind of obviously they won the final there on neutral territory. But in terms of really memorable away wins, you probably got to go back to the Allianz when they beat Bayern Munich for a scalp kind of as big as that, because you're talking about the Spanish champions in their own backyard, and you know, especially in that atmosphere, because it was intimidating, it was absolutely deafening, the din in there. You know, Simeone is a master at getting the fans whipped into a frenzy, and Liverpool did incredibly well to come out of it on top. I mean, it was such a crazy, chaotic game. I think probably far removed from the one that a lot of people were expecting, because you know, we thought that it would be quite cagey and that Atletico would just frustrate Liverpool for long periods and try and feed off any mistakes that came their way. But Liverpool were sensational early on, weren't they? Threatened to absolutely run away with it, and then the wheels came off to the point where you almost thought there was no way back, and then you know, obviously the big decisions that I'm sure we'll come on to ended up going Liverpool's way in that second half, and they found a way to grind it out, and it's put them in a fantastic position in the group.
We've mentioned it before when these sides have met, but there's real parallels between the two clubs, as you mentioned, in terms of the emotion and the effect that the actual crowd have on a fixture like this.
Yeah. I think it's that emotion, isn't it? It's emotional football. It's that strong bond between a manager and the fan base, that where two clubs definitely where you know, fans do not turn up to just to be entertained. They turn up to be part of the occasion, and it was certainly like that on Tuesday night in terms of the part that the Atletico fans played in helping their team get back into it after you know a pretty torrid opening 15 minutes, and I think that made it all the sweeter in the end as well to be in that kind of environment when you know it was intimidating, and to be able to dig deep and find a way to win, and we've been treated to all kinds of different wins from Liverpool already this season, but that felt pretty significant to me, that to go away to somewhere as tough as that and win, but you know, but still actually be saying, well, you know, yes, they could have done a lot better. Klopp was very open himself, didn't he? He said, you know, it won't feature in our book of best wins in terms of the quality of football. Described it as a dirty 3 points, but he said dirty 3 points are almost or quite often the most important. And yeah, you'd certainly file it under that.
Yeah, the so-called group of death, and Liverpool are top of it and sailing through at the moment. Look, there's a million different talking points we could go with. We'll just start with the fact that obviously Mo Salah scores the first goal, although at that moment in time, and I would imagine in the stadium, James, you didn't have a clue whether it was him or whether Milner got a touch or whether it was an own goal. In fact, the commentators on telly here spent about 10 minutes trying to decipher this.
Yeah, well, where I was in the back of the press box in the stadium, there were no monitors, which you know usually you have at games these days. So I knew it had taken a slight deflection, but didn't know whether it had come off Milner or the defender. And well, initially I went onto UEFA's website, and they gave the goal to Milner, you know, at the start, and then I think it was only about 10 or 15 minutes later that it had changed back to Mo Salah. I think you know quite rightly. I think if there's any doubt whatsoever, it has to be Salah's goal because, it was another piece of brilliance from him out of nothing, wasn't it? Again, picking that ball up on the wide on the right, nothing looked on. You know, suddenly that burst of acceleration and the quality to get away from the defenders and get the shot away. So, it was just a dream start for Liverpool. And I thought Atletico looked absolutely shell-shocked by the intensity they were hit with. I just don't think they're used to facing that on a weekly basis in La Liga. You know, I think they thought that Liverpool they'd almost be a bit of a cagey start where Liverpool would just ease their way into it. And obviously Atletico were more than happy for Liverpool to back off and have the ball. But they didn't. Yeah, they didn't expect to be carved apart in the manner in which they were in that opening 10-15.
None of us were thinking it was going to be 2-0 after an early stage in the game. The only person who would have been unhappy with that Mo Salah goal would be John Aldridge. That beats Aldo's record, doesn't it? Is that 9 in a row now for Mo Salah?
Yeah, first player in the club's history to score in 9 successive matches. And also, you know, getting 2 on the night meant he went ahead of Steven Gerrard in terms of the highest goal scorer in Champions League history for the club. So yeah, it just feels like every week at the moment he's rewriting the record books, isn't he? So, and obviously for him to have the calmness and the composure to stick away that penalty late on as well. When, you know, again, in you know, he's when he's you know, I think there was even a bit of gamesmanship as well as from the Atletico players, even from the ball boys behind the goal doing everything they could to put him off, probably under instructions from Diogo Simeone. So Liverpool are, you know, obviously absolutely blessed at the moment to have Mo Salah leading the charge.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Okay, let's move on to the good/bad. And Naby Keita is who you focused on your piece for The Athletic. And I think it's fair enough to say we saw a flash of brilliance there in his goal to make it 2-0. But then we also saw some of the negative parts of the game, which have perhaps hindered him. So maybe challenging for the ball, winning enough possession back. And you sort of summed it up by saying it's a little bit of a microcosm of his career to date, James.
Yeah, that's how it felt to me watching it, because you know I think Naby Keita is one of those players who polarizes opinion amongst supporters, and certainly when you look at the reaction to what I wrote, you see that in terms of it doesn't seem to be too much middle ground, even though I tried to kind of tread down that middle ground. And I think, you know, I like Keita. I think there's a lot of redeeming qualities in him. As a midfielder, I think he gives Liverpool something different with his dynamism and his creativity. And as we saw the other night, it was, you know, a fantastic strike on the volley to put them 2-0 up. But, you know, the reality is that in his fourth season at Liverpool, you know, the jury is still out, and that we're still seeing weaknesses in his game that are being exposed. And it's that tactical side of the game, the work off the ball, that at times lets him down. And you know, that's it's strange, because you know, some people have said, oh, you know, it's a witch hunt, you know, you've got it in for him, it's bias, it's, you know, it's, that's nonsense. It's like, you know, the reality is he got subbed off again at half time in a massive European game. The last time, you know, the reason why I felt it was, you know, it was kind of timely to write about him was, well, for a start, I haven't really written about Keita so far this season. And also, let's not forget, you know, the last big European night Liverpool had was in Madrid. He didn't even make it to half time when he got subbed off against Real Madrid. Now back in Madrid, across town at the Metropolitano, and you know, and again when Klopp rings the changes at half time, which he needed to do clearly to try and get back some control, he's the one that makes way. And you know, it's not a personal thing, you know, it's Klopp. And I know people said, well, after the game Klopp said that wasn't the reason he took him off.
Oh, clearly wasn't it? Yeah. I think for any...
Of course it was. I mean, you're not going to get... Klopp does not throw players under buses, does he? You know, he's not going to say, I had to take Naby off because I wasn't impressed with his work off the ball. You know, there was... You know, and I know Klopp pointed to the fact that he's had... like a grueling schedule with, I think he'd had I think it was his fourth start in the space of 11 days with the games against Sudan and Morocco that he had on international duty with Guinea. But no, it was, you know, he did, you can't get away from the fact that he was in part responsible for those two Atletico goals in the first half. I mean, Klopp said himself, we knew that they had that short corner routine, we'd worked on it. And of course, he's there essentially to stop Thomas Lemar from going down the inside. We know that Thomas Lemar, who I thought was brilliant on the night, is going to go onto his left foot, yet, you know, he got past Keita far too easily. Yes, still the danger should have been dealt with before then, but, you know, that was, you know, influential in Atletico's first goal. And then for the second one, João Felix got away from him far too easily. And then again, I thought Van Dijk didn't cover himself in glory for Griezmann's second goal, where he was, it just seemed like his body position was all wrong. So it was, you know, yes, Keita should have stopped the danger before that point, but it still, you know, it wasn't like Keita's mistake put one on a plate for Atletico. There was still a fair bit to go. But it was even, I was watching Klopp in that first half, and even after the second Atletico goal, he was kind of, you know, shouting at, you know, Keita, and, you know, worried about that right hand side, and feeling that, you know, that was where the space was that Atletico were exploiting. And, you know, of course he took action at the break, and you know, and again we saw Liverpool are a very different team with and without Fabinho. You know, I can understand why Klopp didn't start Fabinho, because I think clearly having gone straight to Spain from Brazil, he hadn't been able to train with the squad, so he wouldn't have worked on the tactical shape and all the things they would have done at Kirby. That change just had to be made. I think Naby Keita has still got a really important role to play for Liverpool. You know, I think against lesser teams, he can be really important with helping Liverpool break them down. I thought he was very good against Watford last weekend, but you know, you can't get away from the fact that when the really big games come along, he either doesn't get picked or he tends to get brought off early, which is what happened the other night. You know, he was an unused sub against Chelsea at home. He was an unused sub against Man City at home. So, you know, and I think you're entitled when you spend, what was it, in the best part of £53 million on a player. We're talking about the third most expensive signing in the club's history. You know, I think it's just common sense that, of course, you expected a bit more. You know, he was bought to influence the biggest games. And it just felt to me like that the other night did almost sum up his career. You know, if you love Naby Keita, there was something there to cling to, a piece of absolute brilliance. And if you've got your doubts about him, then, you know, that was there for you as well, because, he wasn't good enough off the ball, and it ultimately resulted in another early shower for him in Madrid.
And, you know, there's big competition for places as well in the midfield. Curtis Jones is coming back. Thiago's going to be fit as well. And once you've got all those players fit and able to be involved, I mean, it just really heightens the pressure. I mean, if we're thinking about, you know, Jürgen, a man who gives second chances, he clearly loves Naby and he's clearly given a lot of chances, hasn't he? But Naby's got to start doing it himself. He's got to show the all-round package to feature long-term for this side.
Yeah, and I think that's a fair point, that at the moment, you know, the midfield options are depleted. So it feels like a bit of a wasted opportunity for Keita, really, in terms of, you know, and especially I think even more frustrating the fact that, you know, he scores that fantastic goal and you think, you know, at that point, you know, I thought I would be writing about, what a contrasting return to Madrid for him compared to the last one when, you know, an error-strewn display ends in, you know, the kind of the embarrassment of getting subbed off before half time. But he couldn't build on it. And that was a real frustration for me because we all want to see Naby Keita hit the heights that we know that he is capable of. But you're right, you know, with Curtis Jones coming back, Thiago, you know, in the new year, you know, obviously at some point we'll have Harvey Elliott back around as well. So the competition is tough, and it'll be intriguing to see what Klopp decides at the weekend. Because, like I said, you know, this is probably United away, probably the next biggest one after Chelsea and City coming to Anfield, and Keita wasn't trusted for those games. You know, will he be trusted for the weekend at Old Trafford? That'll be interesting to see. And obviously, I think looking to the longer term, there's a big decision for Liverpool to make there in terms of, he's got the same time left in his contract as Mo Salah. And obviously, there's a lot of talk about Salah at the moment. And, you know, so you're reaching that point, certainly next summer, if not before, where you say, well, you either have to give Naby Keita a new contract or you probably have to look to move him on because, you know, you can't risk him going down into the final year of his deal. I think it's quite a difficult Liverpool career to make sense of because, you know, he hasn't been I wouldn't describe him as a flop. I think there's been times along the way when he's made some really, really important contributions. Yet there's definitely that nagging feeling of he hasn't fulfilled the potential that we all hoped, having watched him light up the Bundesliga before he came to Liverpool.
James, what have we learnt from this Atletico game going into the Manchester United game? What have Liverpool got to avoid doing? I mean, they can't leave the spaces that they did against Atletico and expect United not to punish them because they've got some real force going forward. Your Rashfords, your Greenwoods, they've got some really good attacking players.
Yeah, I think, I'm sure something that's been talked about since Tuesday night amongst Klopp and his staff will be game management, because I think that was probably what was lacking the other night against Atletico at times. Having got themselves in that fantastic position to let Atletico back in the game and to ease off. It makes Sunday such an intriguing battle, because, you know, I sat and watched Manchester United against Atalanta, and you're licking your lips 1 minute at just how open United look and how vulnerable defensively, and you look at the form of Salah and Mane and Firmino and you think, you know, this fixture's coming at a great time. But then, you know, similarly, you know, the way in which United staged that fight back, and yes, Liverpool are a much superior team to Atalanta, but, you know, they do have serious firepower, United, and the protection has to be right in front of the back line. The back line can't make the kind of sloppy mistakes that they made the other night. I think that's the big thing for me, that control and game management, because we know Liverpool are creating so many chances going forward. You know, the fluency is back. I mean, it's a crazy statistic, this the one that, you know, that they've scored three or more goals in eight successive away games in all competitions. You know, no English team has ever done that. So we know that they've got all the weapons they need to go and hurt United. It is just a case of can they keep it tight down the other end? And obviously a big part of that is not just the defensive line, but also, you know, the balance of the midfield and making sure that they cover spaces and block passing lanes and to probably just keep the ball better as well, I think, in terms of just to ease pressure at times, because it's unrealistic to think you're going to have it all your own way at Old Trafford.
Your head would say that Liverpool are a superior footballing side at the moment. I think everyone would probably agree on that. But your heart would say, in this fixture, Liverpool haven't always been successful at Old Trafford. It's been a little bit of a higgledy-piggledy ride there. And actually, once you put 70-odd thousand United supporters in there as well, this really does influence this sort of fixture.
Yeah. I think the big thing for me, even watching United stage that recovery last night, was I still feel they're quite brittle. I still feel that you can get at this United team. I still think that, you know, Liverpool can prey on that. I think you know, Solskjaer is under really real, you know, serious pressure at the moment, and you know, and that's the big thing for Liverpool. They need to prey on that. They need to impose themselves on the game early on. You don't want to give United a foothold, because it will be buoyant early on. But we saw with those boos that echoed around Old Trafford at halftime last night that it's not exactly built on strong foundations. You know, there's a lot of frustration behind the scenes, and of course, you know, that the absolute nightmare scenario for them is Liverpool coming to town and exposing that gulf that I believe exists between the teams, because you know, it's despite all the money that United have spent, you know, they look like, to me, a team of individuals rather than a cohesive unit, and that comes down to the manager, really. You know, I think the difference between Liverpool and Manchester United, the biggest difference is in terms of the caliber of the two men leading the charge. You know, it's when you compare, you know, what Klopp has achieved to Solskjaer. I think Liverpool fans will want Solskjaer to stay in charge as long as possible, because I think with the individual talent they've got, they're always gonna win games, because you know, they've you know, when you've got Ronaldo, when you've got Rashford, when you've got Bruno Fernandes, players like this, you know, their individual quality will get you over the line at times. But you know, I think, as we've seen already this season, United aren't serious contenders for the Premier League title, and Sunday represents a massive opportunity for Liverpool to underline, you know, what the difference is between the teams.
Someone made a comment to me at Preston North End last night as I was covering the game about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. I said, well, you know, is there another Premier League team, any of the Premier League teams, that would actually appoint Ole as their manager? In fact, if you went into the Championship, you know, is there a Championship team that would appoint Ole? And that sort of leaves you scratching your head thinking, well, possibly not.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, it's, yeah, I thought it was a little bit of a strange appointment at the time, because, you know, of course, for a job of that stature, usually you're looking for someone with a CV to give you that belief as a, if you're a fan of that club, that he can take you to the next level. Whilst, you know, they obviously went down the route of someone who was adored because of what he'd done as a player at the club, rather than, you know, his track record in management. And I think at times there's been a bit of an incoherent recruitment strategy there, that, you know, even this summer, where, you know, and it's, you know, you're kind of loathe to criticize it, because, you know, again, Ronaldo pops up and delivers the, you know, the late winner, and, you know, we know he's an unbelievable talent, but, you know, did they really need him in terms of when you're looking at priorities to take United the next step, to make them serious contenders this season? It just felt like, you know, that midfield area was probably where they really needed, you know, another signing. So yeah, it's, I think it's going to be, you know, I can't wait for Sunday afternoon. I'll be at Old Trafford, and, you know, it was, because as good as obviously it was to see Liverpool win there towards the back end of last season, and you know,
in an empty stadium.
Yeah, which is, it just isn't the same, is it? I think,
no.
You know, and I'm sure, you know, in the same way as for Evertonians, winning at Anfield for the first time in 20 odd years won't have meant quite so much, because the away end was empty. The same for Liverpool going there and winning at Old Trafford, which of course was the first time they'd managed that under Klopp. You know, traditionally under Klopp, I think they've almost been a bit hesitant. Certainly in the games at Old Trafford under Klopp played in front of supporters, they haven't, you know, it's almost, I've always got the feeling that they've almost shown United a bit too much respect, and treated them like, you know, they are, you know, they're serious contenders, when, you know, during that period United haven't been. And I think that's another big thing on Sunday, in that atmosphere, which it will be, you know, it will be very lively, certainly before the game. I just hope Liverpool do impose themselves on it, like they did early on against Atletico, because, you don't want, you don't want United to be given any kind of any greater encouragement in this one. And I'm sure we'll see Fabinho come back into the side. I think that's absolutely nailed on. I think obviously Curtis Jones is back in full training as well, so that gives Klopp another option in that department. And then, you know, I think, you know, it'd be interesting to see whether we see Jota, because he hasn't started the last two. He's relatively fresh, so you wonder whether Klopp might be looking to draft him in as well.
And we've spent plenty of time in the past few pods talking about Mo, but let's face it, this is the greatest stage, one of the biggest matches in world football for Mo Salah and for Cristiano Ronaldo. And let's face it, these lads are no different than anyone else. They're thinking that themselves heading into this. Mo knows he's scored his brilliant goals against, you know, Watford and Manchester City, but he knows he's heading into a fixture where he can properly be on the world stage.
Yeah, 100%. Because I think, you know, the reality is that these are the two biggest teams, two biggest clubs in world football, certainly in British football, and two of the biggest in world football. Because, you know, regardless of what these clubs have won in recent years, and obviously Liverpool have been much more successful in the past few seasons. But, you know, when you look at genuine heavyweights in terms of fan bases, and in terms of, you know, viewing figures, this one, you know, the eyes of the world will be at Old Trafford on Sunday afternoon. And you know, it's the reality is that, you know, the games against Man City don't have the same pull because they don't have the same history and the tradition, and that still counts for an awful lot. And I'm sure Mo Salah will be absolutely licking his lips, especially, you know, when you looked at the way in which, you know, Lindelof was exposed at times last night, and Maguire as well. And again, I think United have that issue with protection in front of the back line that Liverpool have had at times, certainly they had the other night in Atletico. So you just struggle to see it being cagey. I think, you know, it has these games, sometimes you build them up and they end up being, you know, absolute damp squibs, but it doesn't feel like that will be the case with this one, because it's two teams who at the moment their biggest strength is going on the front foot and attacking. And you know, I just think just the amount of attacking quality on the pitch will almost demand that it is a very, very entertaining contest. And for Liverpool, it just feels really big, and it feels like it's coming at a good time as well, because I think, what is it, 21 games unbeaten in all competitions. That attacking fluency really is back. And, you know, there's no better place to go and showcase that than down the other end of the East Lancs.
Finally, a word on the ref. It's Anthony Taylor from Withenshaw, so just a few miles out of Manchester. But Liverpool have actually got a good record with him in charge, and he was the man who officiated last year in the 4-2. But we've got a Merseyside involved. Mike Dean's the fourth official. Don't know whether that balances it up. Anthony Taylor actually hasn't been that bad, has he, for Liverpool games?
No, I think, you know, you're right. He did do the game there last season. I think obviously, with his greater Manchester roots, there's always a lot of talk when Anthony Taylor does get these kind of games. But let's just hope that we're not talking about the officials come Sunday evening. Hopefully we're talking about the quality of the football out there. The only thing I do think is odd, I don't know why Michael Oliver seems to have suddenly been overlooked for games like this. It feels like some of the big games Liverpool have had this season, you almost felt it, traditionally he was, yeah, for me, he's still the best referee around. So it's slightly odd that he hasn't been given a game like this. But I'm not massively worried. I think as well, you know, you've got, you know, yes, of course, a referee can influence a game, but, you know, with VAR there as well, I think that gives you that kind of added security that, you know, if a bad mistake is made, that it will be swiftly rectified. And certainly VAR came to Liverpool's rescue a little bit the other night with that penalty overturn. And talking about our referees, I think you've got to give that German official a massive amount of praise, because I must admit, when I was sat there and listening to the jeers and the whistles and watching Simeone and his staff chuntering away in his ear and the players shouting at him, you just thought, there's no chance he's going to overturn this in this kind of environment, because people are just going to go absolutely wild. But yeah, fair play to that German official for having the balls to decide that, you know, that I felt the Atletico player had kind of initiated the contact initially. I thought it would have been a very, very soft penalty. And so, yeah, VAR came to Liverpool's rescue there. And I think as well with it being playing Tuesday, you know, they came back and they've got a, you know, decent preparation time. So, yeah, there can be no excuses going to Old Trafford on Sunday. You know, it's, I think the preparations have been good, and now it's all about going out there and you know, like we talked about before, I think Liverpool have got a fantastic opportunity to showcase that they are on a different level to United at the moment.
Talking about brave, Hermoso giving away that penalty. What on earth was going through his mind? But his manager later, I mean, did you see him actually come out the dressing room? Has he been seen since? Has Diego Simeone actually?
Well, that's one of the shames with obviously the ongoing COVID restrictions. Means you don't get the mix zone area that you used to get where players walk through, and
he's disappeared.
It was just a rush of blood, wasn't it? It was bizarre the fact that, you know, when I think it was Trent who hooked the ball back forward, wasn't it? It was, you know, as you know, there was no real danger to clatter into Jota like that was absolutely crazy. It's, you know, it was almost like, because it was, you know, it was probably symptomatic of how combative and on, you know, the in your face Atletico tried to be, but of course, you know, you've got to pick and choose your moments, and Liverpool obviously weren't complaining, and you know, and I think you mentioned at the start, Steve, you know, the group of death, which is what it was being called at the start when the draw was made, and you know, yet I think beyond Klopp's wildest dreams, the fact that three games in, Liverpool are 5 points clear with a 100% record. And, you know, if they can beat Atletico at Anfield in a couple of weeks, then, you know, that's pretty much job done. And, you know, and that will help Liverpool further down the line because, you know, the fixture schedule is going to get more and more hectic. And, you know, how Klopp would absolutely love, you know, one game, if not two, in the Champions League where there isn't really much riding on the outcome and he can rest key personnel.
James, we'll leave it there. Can't wait to catch up next week after the Manchester United game. So look out for James's coverage of that on the site. Thank you very much indeed for listening to the Red Agenda, and we'll be back after the weekend.